of the most interesting questions about artificial intelligence are existential. Not in the sense of, will AI destroy the world, but more like, what can it teach us about ourselves? About the deep nature of our own human minds? What's the difference between machine and human intelligence? Well, Megan O'Giblin is one of the best writers I know on this subject. In her book, God, Human, Animal, Machine, thinking about the nature of machine intelligence leads her to questions about her own creativity, about the unconscious, and our human longing for transcendence.
Before we get started here, just for kind of scene setting, is there anything to mention?
Scene setting? I know. I racked my brain.
And because Megan lives in Madison, Wisconsin, just a few miles from our studio, Steve Paulson stopped by her house to get a sense of how she's thinking about AI now.
I did find my old notebooks that I did automatic writing in.
Oh.
It's not really, I don't know how.
Okay, that's cool, actually. Huh. That's right. Megan has a whole stash of notebooks filled with her automatic writing. The kind of stream of consciousness prose the surrealists churned out 100 years ago when they were trying to tap directly into their unconscious. And one more thing. This all came out in a series of sessions under hypnosis.
The hypnotist was very insistent that I write fast.
Wow.
So I was in his office lying down on a recliner. And, you know, he led me through this whole visualization exercise. I had to stare at the ceiling, keeping my eyes open without blinking for a certain amount of time. There was also some like bells and gongs involved. And then he said, okay, you can pick up your computer now and start typing. He said, the only rule is that you can't stop typing.
And were you actually in a hypnotic state at that point?
I was in a weird state. I don't know if I was under full hypnosis. I did this several times with him, and I'm still not really sure I'm fully hypnotizable. But then I also did these little exercises. So like and this is something that the surrealists used to do too. Like when you first wake up in the morning, your brain is still loose, very associative in that sort of dream state. Just grab a notebook and start writing without thinking. And so this was the notebook I used to do that. And I can barely even make out my writing because it was so, I was trying to do it very quickly. Yeah.
Would you be willing to read anything from your notebook? I'll let you choose if there's anything there.
I don't know if you've read any of the surrealist texts. So it's weird because a lot of what I wrote sounds very similar. It's just really free association. So this one I think is mostly legible. I could try to read some of it.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. And all the times we came to bed, there was never any sleep. Dawn bells and doorbells and daffodils on the side of the road, glaring with their faces undone. And all those trips back and forth when the sun was so high and naked in the sky, we thought that it might drown us. Maybe there is salvation in the soft touch, the lone sound, the medals, and the trophies of our former age. But when it comes to that, we will need the thunder and the solitary guidance of some greater force.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So why did you want to do this? Why did you go to a hypnotist and why did you want to try automatic writing?
Well, so I was going through a period of writer's block, which I had never really experienced before. It was during the pandemic, and I was working on a book about technology and AI. GPT-3 was just released to researchers. And I was reading this algorithmic output, synthetic text, that was just so wildly creative and poetic. These models could basically do a sonnet in the style of Shakespeare or, you know, write just very, very sort of dreamlike, surreal texts, short stories, poems.
So you wanted to see if you could do this yourself, not using an AI model, but yourself.
Well, I became really curious about this idea of what does it mean to produce language without consciousness? And for me, as somebody who at this point in my life, I was really overthinking everything in the writing process, and my own critical faculty was getting in the way of my creativity. It seemed really appealing to think about what would it be like to just write without overthinking everything. I think I just got really curious about the unconscious and especially its role in creativity. Like a lot of writers, I've often felt when I'm writing that I'm in contact with something larger than my conscious mind, that I'm being led somewhere by the piece, or that the piece that I'm writing is somehow more intelligent than I am. And you hear artists talk about this all the time. They feel like they're not really creating so much as they're uncovering something.
They sort of become a conduit to some larger consciousness, maybe.
I think ultimately what I was looking for was some sort of external meaning or guidance, or some sort of, I don't know, I wanted some sort of guidance on questions in my life.
Well, let me ask you about that, because there's some things that are really interesting about what you're saying, given that you're sort of searching for this meaning outside yourself, because you have a rather unusual background for someone who's known mainly as a writer about technology and AI. Not only do you come out of a fiction writing background, which I don't think you do anymore, but I could be wrong, you also grew up in a very religious family. You grew up as a Christian fundamentalist, right?
Yeah. My parents were evangelical Christians. And actually, everybody I knew growing up believed what we did, basically. My whole extended family are born-again Christians. I was homeschooled along with all my siblings growing up. So most of our social life revolved around church. Yeah, when I was 18, I went to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago to study theology and was planning to go into full-time ministry.
So there definitely was meaning out there in the world for you, I assume, during whole time. I mean, the whole point was everything was infused with meaning and God.
Yes. Our lives had a definite purpose. Our purpose as human beings on this earth was very clear.
But you left the faith, right?
Yeah, I had a faith crisis when I was 2 years into Bible school. I have been having doubts for a while about the validity of the Bible and the Christian God. I dropped out of Bible school after 2 years and pretty much left the faith. I think I began identifying as agnostic almost right away.
And is that how you identify now?
Confused, I guess. I don't know. Agnostic is probably the best term, yeah.
One thing that's so fascinating is, so you lost sort of that very hardcore Christian faith, but my sense is you're still extremely interested in questions of transcendence, the spiritual life. That stuff matters to you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think anyone who grew up in that world doesn't ever, and a lot of people do leave that world, and I don't think anyone ever totally leaves it behind. And my interest in technology, I think, grew out of a lot of those larger questions about, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have a soul? You know, all these things that were very certain when I was growing up.
A few years after she left Bible school, Megan read Ray Kurzweil's The Age of Spiritual Machines, the book that gave transhumanism a kind of cultural buzz. It was a utopian vision of the future where we would download our consciousness into machines and evolve into a new species.
And it was this incredible vision of transcendence, this idea that we were going to enlarge our intelligence, our physical capacities. We were going to essentially become immortal and be able to live forever. And
so there's some similarities to your Christian upbringing.
Yeah, as somebody who was just at the age of, 25, starting to accept that I wasn't going to live forever in heaven, that I wasn't going to have this glorious existence after death, it was incredibly appealing to think that maybe science and technology could bring about a similar transformation.
Megan threw herself into this transhumanist world, but once again, she eventually grew skeptical of this utopian vision.
But it did lead me to a larger interest in technology. And I think through reading a lot of those scenarios, particularly mind uploading, started thinking about what does it mean to be a self or to be a thinking mind? But there was this question that was always elided, which is, is there going to be some sort of first-person experience there, right? You know, nobody had a good answer for that because nobody knows what consciousness is. And that, to me, was really the fundamental problem and what got me really interested in AI, because, I mean, that's the area in which we're playing out that question.
Isn't the assumption that AI has no consciousness, has no first-person experience? Isn't that the fundamental difference between artificial intelligence and the human mind?
It's definitely the consensus, but how can you prove it? And now that we have chatbots that I think just actually this week, Anthropic released a new chatbot that's claiming to be sentient, that it's conscious and it has feelings and emotions and thought.
They just say that, but why should we believe that if the chatbot says that?
It's different. We don't know how it's different, really. We really don't know what's happening inside these models because they're black box models. They're neural networks that have many, many hidden layers. So the relationships that they're developing between words, between concepts, the patterns that they're latching onto are completely opaque, even to the people designing them. So it is, it's a kind of alchemy.
So let's get a little more concrete here and talk about the kind of AI models that we hear a lot about, like ChatGPT, these extremely sophisticated large language models that seem really intelligent. But I mean, the way these models work, correct me if I'm wrong on this, is it's just algorithms about language. You're sorting through these massive databases and you're constructing words that make a lot of sense. But is that all it is? Is it just algorithmic wordplay?
Yeah, Emily Bender and some other engineers at Google came up with the term stochastic parrots. Stochastic is statistical, relying on probabilities and a certain amount of randomness. And then parrots, because they're mimicking human speech, they're able to essentially just predict what the next word is going to be in a certain context. That to me feels very different than how humans use language, which usually involves intent. We typically use language when we're trying to create meaning with other people. It's sort of an intersubjective process.
So in that interpretation, the human mind, the thinking mind, is fundamentally different than AI, correct?
I think it is. I mean, there's people, I mean, Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, famously tweeted, "I'm a stochastic parrot and so are you." You know, so there's people who are very, you know, the people who are creating this technology who believe that there's really no difference between how these models are using language and how humans use language.
And if you really take that idea seriously, that there's no fundamental difference between the human mind and artificial intelligence, or if AI will generate some entirely new kind of intelligence, well, who knows what's ahead for us? Do you think that an AI so advanced would seem to have godlike capacities? Coming back to our question about transcendence and the future possibilities of machines, will it become so sophisticated we almost can't distinguish between that and more conventional religious ideas of God?
I mean, that's certainly the goal for a lot of people developing the technology.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All the Sam Altman, Elon Musk, they've all sort of absorbed the Kurzweil idea of the singularity. They are trying to create a God, essentially. That's what AGI, artificial general intelligence, is. It's essentially AI that can surpass human intelligence.
But just surpassing intelligence is different than God, I think. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
I mean, the thinking is that once it gets to a level of human intelligence, it can start modifying and improving itself. And at that point, it becomes a recursive process where there is going to be some sort of intelligence explosion. This is the belief. Yeah, I think that's another thing that is a question of what are we trying to design? You know, if you want to create a tool that helps people solve cancer or come up with solutions to climate change, you can do that with a very narrowly trained AI. But the fact that we are working right now toward artificial general intelligence, that's something different. That's creating something that is going to, yeah, essentially be like a god.
Why do you think Elon Musk and Sam Altman want to create that?
I think they read a lot of sci-fi as kids. I don't know. Obviously, there's economic incentives and profit motives and all of that, but I do feel like it's something deeper. I do feel like people are trying to look for or create some sort of system that is going to give answers that are difficult to come by through ordinary human thought.
Do you think that's an illusion? If it's smart enough, if it reaches this singularity, that it can kind of solve the problems that we imperfect humans cannot?
I don't think so, because I mean, I think it's similar to what I was looking for in dream analysis or automatic writing, which is this source of meaning that doesn't involve thought, or a source of meaning that's external to my experience. And life is infinitely complex and every situation is different. And that requires this constant process of meaning making, thinking. You know, Hannah Arendt talks about this thinking and then thinking again. You're constantly making and unmaking thought as you experience the world. And machines are, you know, rigid. They're trained on the whole corpus of our human history, right? And so they're reflecting back to us. They're like a mirror. They're reflecting back to us a lot of our own beliefs. But I don't think that they can give us that sense of authority or meaning that we're looking for as humans. I think that's something that we ultimately have to create for ourselves.
That's Megan O'Giblin, talking with Steve Paulson at her home in Madison, Wisconsin. Her most recent book is called God, Human, Animal, Machine. By the way, you might like to know, the music in this segment is the kind of thing we might be hearing more of in the future. A live improvisation between a human pianist, David Dolan, and an AI system that can listen and respond musically in real time. The AI system was designed and programmed by composer Oded Bentall, recorded last August at Kingston University in London.